hug, and my irritation melts away as Tristan kneels until he's level with the little boy's face, brushing the smudge of dirt from his cheek.
"Have you been in the tunnels all day?" he asks.
Simon nods. "Yeah, don't be mad, I just..."
He leans in and lowers his voice.
"When the other kids see me, they laugh. They're mean."
My heart twists violently as Simon's knuckles blanch where he grips his toy sword. Moving my gaze from him, they land on Paul, whose expression mirrors the feelings swimming inside me. Although, when he sees me looking, he wipes the emotion from his face, spinning around to face the stove. Tristan leans back, his nostrils flaring, his veiny hands and ringed fingers gripping the boy's shoulders tight.
"You're a lion, aren't you?"
Yeah, he sniffles.
"That's right. And those kids? They're sheep. We never allow ourselves to care about the sheep, little lion. Do you understand?"
Simon nods.
"You're better than they'll ever be,"
Tristan murmurs, tapping his chin with his fingers. A knot lodges in my throat, something heavy and warm settling in my chest and swirling outward, like smoke unfurling through my veins and heating every part of me. Tristan stands, smoothing his hand over the top of Simon's head, before looking over at me.
"Come on, little doe. Wouldn't want to keep your new husband waiting."
Chapter 11. Tristan. "So what does your brother want?" I glance at Lady Beatro from my peripheral as we walk down the long corridor. It's an unusually bright day in Saxham, the clouds breaking just enough to send small rays of sunshine through the stained glass windows and splay across her skin. My fingers flex, wanting to grab my pencils and sketch out the vision. "He's the king. He doesn't have to want anything to get it." She smirks.
"You sound bitter."
"Do I? A little." Her shoulders lift.
"Are you?"
My chest twists as I slip a joint from behind my ear and place it in my mouth, my tongue flicking the edge as it rolls across my lips. My private tutors called it an oral fixation, right before they'd try to lash it out of me, saying it was uncouth for a prince to be seen with things in his mouth. I tried to explain it kept me calm, kept away the obsessive thoughts and the anxiety churning like a stew in my gut. But they didn't care how it made me feel, only what it made me look like. "Are we friends now, little doe?" I ask. "Stop calling me that." She cuts me a glare and my heart pounds, excited to be riling her up. "You're very demanding. Has anyone ever told you that?"
"And you're rude,"
she retorts. "It's not an outstanding quality for a queen consort," I continue. "You may want to work on that before your etiquette courses start and they beat it out of you." Her footsteps falter and she stops, spinning to face me.
"Beat it out?"
Her voice trails off as she watches me, and I sense the tension in the air growing thick even before her gaze snags on my scar. It tightens around me until my lungs compress, but I revel in the discomfort. "Don't worry." My finger taps against the raised flesh on my brow. "This isn't a result of bad manners. Not mine, anyway." She nods but doesn't avert her eyes.
"Thanks for the tip."
I move to walk again, but she reaches out, her fingers wrapping around my wrist to keep me in place. My gaze drops to where we're connected, heat flooding through my veins.
"Tell me about the rebels," she demands.
My gut jolts and I spin to face her, allowing her touch to linger on my skin. I trail my eyes along her form, starting at the tip of her black-as-night curls over her deep chocolate eyes, before sliding down to the cleavage peeking from the top of her blood-red dress. My cock grows stiff as I imagine ripping the fabric from her chest and sliding my length between the swell of her breasts until I'm crazy with the need to come. She drops my wrist and backs up a space, her chin lifting like it always does right before she becomes defiant.
The move showcases the expanse of her neck, and my fingers twitch to leave prints on her like paint on a canvas. Slowly, I take the unlit joint from my mouth, placing it behind my ear as I bring my eyes back to hers. What would you like to know?
Everything. I want... Wait.
Her brows draw in.
You're not going to fight me on it? Tell me I shouldn't speak of them or ask questions.
I tilt my head. Now, why would I do that?
Everyone else has. I just...
Her teeth sink into her bottom lip. The sight of her marring her own flesh sends another spike of desire through me, and before I can stop, I'm moving toward her, excitement sparking my insides when she retreats. I continue until she's underneath the stone arches of the window, her body pressing against the greens and yellows of the stained glass. Her eyes flick from my face to the hallway and back, as if she's scared someone will walk by and see us. I enjoy making her nervous. The mask she wears for the world drops away when it's just the two of us. I'm not everyone else, little doe. I step in farther. The yellow specks in her eyes make my stomach tighten. I bring a hand up, running the backs of my fingers along her cheek, liking the way she flinches, either from the touch itself or the cool metal of my rings. It would be such a shame to lose that inquisitive mind, I murmur. I don't wish to stifle it. I wish to break it apart and see what other questions I can find. Her hands move behind her until they're pushing against the window, the colors creating a beautiful halo around her body, as if she's divinity in human form, brought to earth to tempt me from my violent deeds. But I already know she's no angel. My fingers continue down until I'm grazing against her neck. I expect her to pull away, but once again she surprises me, tilting her head as if she craves my touch. You put a lot of trust in me, asking about a rebel faction and thinking I won't throw you in the dungeons and chain you up. Her pulse thrums beneath my thumb, and my muscles cramp in anticipation at the way her nerves show themselves to me, no matter how much she tries to hide them.
You wouldn't, she breathes.
You're so sure? My grip tightens around her throat, wanting to feel her pulse flutter as I whisper dirty words into her ear. I think you'd look lovely tied to a wall and begging for mercy. Something wild unleashes inside of me as her pupils dilate, my balls jerking, making my length pulse against the fabric of my trousers. I drop my hand to her waist, moving us until she's pressed into the alcove of the window's archway, our bodies centimeters apart.
You shouldn't be touching me, she whispers. If someone sees, they could put us to death.
What are you going to do? Take out your cute little dagger and try to bleed me dry? I ask, my hand pushing against her torso so she's flattened against the wall.
Would you like to keep pretending? I know you're not the good girl you claim to be.
Her palms jump to my chest, fingers digging into my black tunic. I lean in, my nose skimming along her hairline, breathing in her soft floral scent. I see what you try so hard to hide. I feel out of control. Every single piece of me is raging to grab her. And fuck her, and brand her, and keep her, which is crazy because I don't even want her. You don't have to hide from me, little doe.
I'm not hiding,
she purrs, her lips brushing against mine.
I'm revolted.
Footsteps sound from down the hall, and we pull away from each other, her fingers tangling in the thin chain of her necklace. I spin away, cursing myself for being so idiotic.
Why would I touch her in the middle of the hallway? Why would I touch her at all?
She's right. If anyone knew, it would be disastrous. My brother would jump on the chance to arrest and put me to death. He wouldn't actually be able to kill me, of course. I'd be gone before he could announce the trial, but being outcast to the Shadowed Lands isn't helpful to my goals at the moment. Anger whips through me like a windstorm, and I turn a glare on Lady Beatro. Is she bewitching me on purpose? Stop looking at me like that, she hisses.
Such a smart mouth, I snap. Watch how you speak to your prince. Her lip curls.
You are absolutely insane, aren't you?
My teeth grind, irritation slashing against my skin.
Your Highness?
A deep voice booms off the stone walls, a royal guard walking toward us. He stops a few paces away and bows.
What?
I hiss, twisting toward him, his gaze bouncing between us.
Am I interrupting?
Annoyance licks at my spine, but before I can reply, Lady Beatrice steps forward, her energy having changed in the blink of an eye into something harsher, something more regal. Her head rises high, her back is straight, and she looks every bit like the queen she's about to become.
Who are you to question him?
My cock throbs so violently I have to bite back the groan. The guard's eyes narrow and he points to his chest.
I'm a commander in the king's army.
And she is your new queen, I snap, moving so she's behind me. The guard's gaze widens as he looks back and forth between us, and it's only then I realize he may have seen more than I thought. I brush my hand down the sleeve of my black tunic, annoyed that I have to take time out of my day to solve this issue. What's your name?
Anthony,
he replies. Anthony, I smile. Is anyone expecting you? He shakes his head, caution waving like yellow flags in his eyes.
Wonderful. You'll come with me then.
I was just on my way to collect a guard about a pressing security matter. I tip my head toward Lady Beatrice.
M'lady, I trust you can find your own way to my brother.
She stares at me for so long, I become convinced she knows what I'm about to do, and I expect her to step in and put a stop to it the way anyone else would. But instead, she drops into the slightest curtsy, her eyes never leaving mine.
Your Highness.
And then she walks away. Chapter 12. Tristan.
It continually surprises me how easy it is to end a person's life. Even as a boy, I never felt the type of attachment others do, and there's only been one death that's affected me. Everyone else can rot. Still, I've always known that I'm just a bit different. Smarter than most? Unspeakably. More fit to rule? Undoubtedly. When you're forced on the fringes of society, yet required to be there, you notice things that go missed when you're paraded in the middle of the stage like a puppet. And most people, I find, are imbeciles. Face value is the only truth, and blind trust is something often found in spades, which I suppose explains the popularity of my brother. He isn't particularly charming, and he doesn't have the brains to be clever or witty, but he's conventionally attractive and spent his life being the crowned prince, and for the masses that's enough. Even though Michael excelled in nothing but pushing down others in order to feel strong, people often want to believe the ones placed on pedestals deserve to be there. But you don't need to have brawn to subdue and exert power. True power lies in the ability to harness energy and wield it like a sword, becoming the puppeteer that masters all the strings instead of the marionette being forced to dance. Years of being tortured under Michael's hands taught me that. Him and his pack of friends, laughing as they pushed my face into dirt and told me I wasn't worth the mud being caked in my cuts. They stole my power. Every day. It wasn't until many years later that I learned to take it back, and it wasn't until my father's death that I craved to take theirs too. Something sharp pricks at my chest, and I shake off the thought, placing my hand on the shoulder of the royal guard as we reach the entrance to the dungeons. He glances back at me, his nerves so potent I can taste them in the air. I wave my arm toward the narrow staircase.
The security issue is down here, sir.
His voice pinches.
Please give me some credit, I chuckle. Would I bring you here for any other reason? He shakes his head.
No, of course not. This isn't really my area.
Your area is wherever I tell you it is. He swallows, his eyes growing large.
Of course.
I follow behind him as we move into the dungeons, our footsteps reverberating off the dark walls as we walk down the concrete steps. The air is moist, and it smells like mold and despair, although there are no prisoners rotting away in the cells. Drips of water splash in the background from the castle's plumbing, and the only other sound is the harsh breathing coming from the guard himself. Excitement winds its way through my middle at his obvious unease. He glances back at me, and I force a grin, nodding toward the last cell as I walk past him and over to the far wall with the large skeleton keys that open the iron doors. Last one here, I say, as I make my way to the final one on the left and insert the key, feeling the click as the lock unlatches. It creaks as I open it and let him go in first. The guard cocks his head.
I'm not a carpenter. I think that's who...
I move to where he stands, the metal key pressing into my palm as I shove at his shoulders, prodding him forward like cattle being led to slaughter. And it's only once he's within the cell that I drop all pretense, spinning around and closing the door behind us. The slam echoes off the bare concrete walls, and the guard tries to go back toward the door.
Your Highness, I...
Reaching up to my ear, I slip the joint from behind it, pulling the matches from my pocket, my stomach tightening as I strike the flame and bring it to my lips. Anthony. I snuff out the fire and puff on the hash, my gaze taking him in from the tips of his toes up to the top of his blonde head. He looks every part a commander, the black and gold of his uniform striking, and the lion in the center of his chest showcasing Gloria Terra's coat of arms. Anthony, I repeat, do you think I'm stupid enough to confuse a carpenter with a member of the King's Army? His lips turn down.
No, I just...
You will refer to me properly. Your Highness. Master. I pause. Or my lord, if you feel so inclined. His body stills, no doubt sensing the malice that has dropped into my tone.
My lord?
He questions. You don't think it's fitting? I cock my head, blowing out a plume of smoke as I walk toward him. I know it's usually reserved for lower-class nobility. However, in this case, its sentiment lends to more of a savior type of title. I step in close now, forcing him back, his hand flying to his hip. He draws his weapon, but his movements are clunky and sharp, and before he can even point the gun, I wrap my fingers around his wrist, twisting his hand in directions not meant for bone. He screams, the pistol clanking as it drops to the concrete floor, and I keep applying pressure until the resistance snaps away and his fingers grow limp, his hand flopping like a useless slab of meat.
As I was saying, I've realized most people pray to find their savior right before they die.
I continue, lowering my voice to a murmur. I'm willing to be that for you. The lighting is dull in the dungeons, but the small lamps resting outside of the cell filter through the iron-barred window of the door, the dull glow glistening off the tears tracking down his face.
Please, your Highness, he stutters.
I tisk. Placing pressure on his wrist again, he groans in obvious pain. Bow before me, Anthony, commander of the King's Army. He drops like a sack of potatoes, his shoulders rising and falling with his whimpers. I take him in as he cowers at my feet, bringing the hash to my mouth and inhaling again, enjoying the way it makes my head buzz. My foot kicks his weapon farther away, and I walk around his trembling frame.
Rather weak for a commander, aren't you?
I question.
You know, if you tell me what you saw in the hallway, I'll set you free. Nothing, he forces out between gritted teeth. I saw nothing.
I chuckle, pausing at his back. I don't believe you. Somebody always sees something.
I swear it. I...
There's an abandoned cabin deep within our forests, and when I was a boy, I used to sneak away to it often. Did you know that? The guard's breathing becomes choppier, but he grows silent. I grip the back of his sandy blonde head, ripping it upward until his face is exposed to the ceiling, the smoke from my cigarette curling between my fingers and wrapping around his skull.
Answer me.
His jaw clenches.
No.
Of course you didn't, I snap. No one does. No one cared enough about little Prince Tristan to give a damn what I did with my time. I toss him to the ground, so he's forced to catch his body with his broken wrist. He collapses, groaning as he brings the limp fingers to his chest.
Our tunnels lead right to it. Isn't that something?
Cocking my head, I wait for his reply, but other than his whimpers, he stays silent. Irritation coils around my muscles, squeezing them tight. My voice lowers. I thought we'd already gone over how I expect an answer to my questions, Anthony.
Yes, it's something.
His voice cracks, and the obvious fear weaving through the tone makes me smile. The point is, I spent hours there, usually taking my sketchbook and drawing until my fingers went numb. It was the only place I could go where the people who hurt me wouldn't follow. I crouch, my hands sliding around his shoulders, pulling him upright into a sitting position. And everyone let me disappear, even though they all saw what went on. Perhaps they never cared. I shrug. Or maybe they thought alone time would help my fragile mental state. My gut churns and I bring the joint to my lips, allowing the smoke to seep from the edges of my mouth as I speak. But some people are beyond saving. Are you beyond saving, Anthony? He shakes his head. That's what they all say. My fingers rest on the dip between his collarbone, directly below his neck. If I were to press right here, it would drop you down and cut off your breath. But only for a moment. Do you know what it feels like to choke repeatedly for hours?
No,
he whimpers. I can show you, if you'd like. I pause. Or you can tell me the truth and hope that I'll be your savior. His eyes narrow, and even through his pain, defiance swirls through his irises.
You're no savior, just a disfigured freak.
Anger slams into me, and my hand whips out before I can control it, the sound of my rings smacking bone loud in the concrete room. He flies to the side, grunting as blood pours from his mouth. He spits, and a tooth flies onto the floor. I ignore his whimpers, lifting up my foot and slamming it down on the side of his face, my abdomen tensing from the rise and fall of my leg as I stomp his cheek, feeling the bone fracture beneath my heel. Red liquid pools around my feet, and I back up a space, closing my eyes, and panting through the torrential downpour of fire that's raining on my insides from his words.
Everyone always underestimates me,
I sigh, stepping forward again, this time to press my foot on his wrist above the snapped bone.
But you're wrong, Anthony, because right now, I'm your god.
I grind my boot down and he grits his teeth, a long groan escaping from his clenched lips.
Don't be shy, sweetheart,
I chuckle. You can scream as loud as you want. No one will hear. His working hand flies to my shin, his fingernails trying to claw my flesh through the fabric of my pants. Bending down close to his face, my voice drops to a whisper.
Just a few paltry words, Anthony, and all this can be over. Tell me what you saw. Will you let me go?
He cries. Laughing, I flick the end of my joint, pinpricks of pleasure racing through me as the ashes rain down on his sweaty, snot-filled face. I promise to let you free.
I saw you and the lady.
His words are deformed, the S's sounding like T's, and every few seconds he spits more blood at my feet. I lighten the pressure on his wrist.
In the window pane, it looked like you were being intimate. Please, I beg of you, my lord.
A satisfied breath escapes me, a thrill rushing through my veins, even as his words remind me of how stupid and reckless I was. I appreciate your honesty. Walking behind him, my hands slide around his neck and grip just beneath his ears. And lucky for you, I am a merciful god. I twist until bones crack and separate. His limp body drops to the ground beneath me, his eyes wide and vacant, a pool of blood forming from where it dribbles out of his mouth.
Be free, Anthony.
I bring the joint to my lips, puffing one last time before dropping it on his corpse, allowing the lit end to burn through the eye of the lion in the center of his chest, a strange sense of satisfaction weaving through me as I watch it turn to ash.
Chapter 13. Sarah B. I'd like to speak with Uncle Rafe, I say to Xander, who sits across from me as Shayna pins my hair. She's idly gossiping with Ophelia, who's crocheting off to the side. He pushes up his glasses, bringing a thick cigar to his mouth and puffing on the end. The smell of the tobacco is sweet and smoky as it hits my nostrils, and it reminds me of sitting in my father's study for hours on end while he worked. A pang of homesickness hits the center of my gut, making me long for the sunshine-filled days in Silver.
I'll arrange it, Xander says.
I force a smile. My uncle told me that Xander was my confidant, the one who I could depend on, the ace in the castle. But the longer I'm here, the more distrust replaces the confidence I arrived with. Shayna, Ophelia, leave us, I say. Their chatter stops, both of them moving from the room without a word. Ophelia doesn't look back, but Shayna does, her wide eyes glancing between Xander and me before she spins around and closes the door behind her. She's been quieter than usual the past couple of days, and when I watch her retreat, I worry that she's unhappy here, that if, given the chance, she'd flee back home and leave me surrounded by people I don't know. It wouldn't be the end of the world, but she's a comfort to me, a small slice of familiarity in an unknown place. I cross my hands in my lap as I stare at Xander, allowing the silence to linger long after they're gone. I may be a woman, but I am not a fool, and I'll no longer allow him to treat me like I am.
Cousin, he starts. Do not cousin me, Alexander.
He stiffens in his chair. I'm tired of sitting here as if nothing is happening, I continue. Your father told me I could trust you. Can I truly?
Sarah, please.
He drums his fingers on the wooden arm of the chair.
You're here because of me. But these things take time. They're fragile, delicate.
My chest tightens.
Time moves a lot slower when you're used as a prop.
He scoffs, shaking his head.
Do you have any idea what has gone into this? What it's taken to get you here?
The chair creaks as he leans forward, resting his elbows on his knees.
I know it's difficult to wait, but everything is falling into place. You just need patience.
Nothing is happening. I flick a curl that's fallen from my face. How long am I supposed to sit here and pretend I'm happy gossiping with the ladies of court?
I want to avenge my father, Xander. Maybe you don't understand that because you've never felt the pain of losing the only one you loved.
He rolls the cigar between his fingers.
In an hour's time, you'll head into the town square with His Majesty, where he'll dine with you and propose in front of the people. We'll have an engagement ball.
He pauses.
Everyone will be there.
My breath whooshes out of me, relief replacing the tension that's been knotting up my spine.
And then we'll make a move?
Xander nods.
Then we'll make our move.
He cocks his head. Is there something else going on? Now it's my posture that straightens, flashes of yesterday afternoon flooding into my brain. What else could be going on? I'm all alone in an enormous castle with nothing but my thoughts and my trust. Xander's lips purse. Well, once your betrothal is announced, you'll be much busier. Etiquette courses and wedding planning, of course. My nose scrunches. Don't forget why you're here, cousin. What this is all for, he implores, lowering his voice and leaning in. We must move with precision, not haste. I know, I let out a sigh, but it doesn't make it any easier. He runs his fingers beneath the frame of his glasses, pinching the bridge of his nose. I'm sorry you felt so alone and in the dark. That was never my intention. I'll do better from now on. The tangles in my stomach loosen. Thank you. The wedding will be within 6 months' time. He stands, buttoning the front of his black jacket, his hand slicking over the top of his hair. 6 months? My eyes widen. He shrugs, his eyes growing serious as they peer into mine. No one said you had to take 6 months. Use this time to play the part, so we can rip them out by the roots. I know what to do, I snap. A small smirk tips his lips. Good. No worries then. Absolutely none. I raise my hands in the air, grinning. The conversation should put me at ease. After all, he's finally speaking to me as if I'm part of the plans. But there's something about the way the air thins that sends alarm tickling my skin, making my hair stand on end. And it hits me that maybe my cousin Xander isn't the person my uncle has led me to believe he is. The nausea in my stomach strengthens, churning like a looming storm.
Lady Beatro, you look stunning.
Michael's voice booms across the court as my ladies-in-waiting and I make our way to the automobiles lined up at the gate. There's a chill in the air, even though it's just past September, and as the clouds loom over the sky, I have another moment of missing the sunshine of silver. I wonder how two places within the same country can be so vastly different, yet coexist within the same borders. I suppose it's because borders are man-made, and Mother Nature doesn't confine herself to the rules of man. If only we all could be so lucky. Thank you, Your Majesty. I drop into a curtsy as I reach him, the stiff bones of my corset making my breathing shallow. I'm sure that Ophelia cinched it too tight, but I ignore the discomfort. Where are you taking me today? I ask, glancing at Timothy, who stands by the back door with his hand outstretched. Michael waves his arm as Timothy helps me into the automobile.
Don't worry your pretty little head about that, he says, once we're in the back seats. Just enjoy the day, and everything that comes along with being on my arm.
I bite back the scoff that's aching to roll off my tongue, my head tilting as I take him in. How do people find him charming? To me, he comes across as arrogant and self-absorbed. How could I not? I peer at him from under the wide brim of my purple hat. Timothy moves into the seat across from us, and my eyes fall to the coat of arms on his chest, my mind thrown back to yesterday afternoon, to the guard who left with Tristan. I was stupid, allowing the prince to corner me the way he did. Simple acts like that can have disastrous consequences. And who is he to me? Nobody. Worse than that. A farcer. But that doesn't stop my stomach from somersaulting at the memory of him pushing against me in the darkened corner, of his hands touching me in ways no one is allowed to touch. And then I think of that guard, the one who did nothing except walk into the wrong place at the wrong time. And while I can't say for sure what happened when they left, deep in my gut, I know the truth. When Tristan's eyes met mine, there was more being said between us than what we spoke into the air. I don't wish death on innocent souls, but sometimes sacrifices must be made for the greater good. The automobile rolls toward the front gates, and my eyes glance out across the courtyard, snagging on the large weeping willow in the distance. I hate myself for the way my heart drops the slightest bit when I don't see jade green eyes watching me from the shadows.
Chapter 14. Tristan. My soon-to-be sister-in-law has become a bit of an obsession. A distraction, if you will, one I don't have time for. I'm convinced the only reason she plagues my thoughts is because she's a puzzle I haven't been able to solve, and since reading people is my specialty, the fact she's a challenge makes her unbearably interesting. The wood floors creak as I pace across the second-story room at the Elephant Bones Tavern, glancing out of the balcony door windows. There must be hundreds of people huddled on the empty land behind the building, waiting for me to address them. Anticipation swirls through me like a gust of wind, until every single nerve ending is lit up with excitement for the future. For my future. The one that should have been mine from the beginning. Violence has grown in the past 2 years, ever since my father's death and my brother's subsequent rise to the throne. Everyone assumes it's random. No one knows it's me pulling the strings, fanning the flames of their anger. It's easy to exacerbate issues when people are starved and forgotten. And it's even easier to gain people's trust and place them strategically throughout the kingdom, waiting patiently for when I call. I push through the rickety double doors to the patio and step onto the Juliet balcony. Cheers erupt and I stand straight, basking in their admiration. Blood heats in my veins, rushing to my groin until my cock hardens. It's exciting to have them all stare at me. I enjoy being revered the way I should have always been. Hello, friends, I project my voice. You've heard the whispers, so let me be the first to confirm. King Michael will marry. Who? Someone yells. Who is not important. I'm sure you'll find out when they make the official announcement. A flash of my little doe's face tumbles through my mind, and my chest tightens. What matters is that you know someone placed her very strategically for one reason, and that's gaining your trust. To make you think sunny days are on the horizon. Comrades, I'm here to tell you, the only blaze on the horizon is the orange glow of fire when we burn their king at the stake. Yells erupt, boots stomping on the ground until it vibrates through the air, creating a low rumble. Burn the king's whore, someone else shouts. My eyes fly to where the voice is coming from, my muscles growing taut. She is not to be touched. The cheers grow quiet at my sharp words, confused faces staring up at me. My gaze lands on Edward, standing in the back corner with Belinda and her husband, Earl, waiting for my cue. When our eyes meet, I see the surprise flowing through them. He hadn't expected me to say that. I hadn't expected to say it. But here we are. It's important not to show our hands too early, friends. I continue. We must bide our time, allow them to believe she is their beacon of hope. And we're supposed to just trust you, a voice rings out. You're one of them. Silence descends over the crowd, and my jaw ticks. I raise my hands out to the side. If you have an issue with my leadership, you're more than welcome to come up here and take it from me. I'm nothing if not fair. No one moves a muscle, and I let the quiet linger, my eyes scanning the crowd to see who dares to think they can question me. Don't be a coward now, when your voice was just so loud. I continue to gaze out, my stare locking on a young man with torn clothing and dusty red hair, his jaw set as he looks up at the balcony. It's an admirable trait, and an honest question. I wave my hand toward him, annoyance pricking against my skin. Come forward. Stand here at the front where everyone can see you. His body stiffens, but he ambles through the crowd until he's in front of them all, forced to crane his neck in order to maintain our eye contact. I smile.
Have I not given enough to earn your trust? How many times do I need to prove my worth?
It's been 2 years, he implores, shaking his head. It's been far longer for me, and we're speaking of treason, enough to kill us all with one wrong move. I raise my fingers in the air and snap. Edward moves through the throng of people, carrying the corpse of Antony Scarenborg, commander of the king's army. Excited murmurs roll through the air like thunder. Do not make the mistake of believing that when I'm not with you, I'm not fighting for you. The red-headed man's eyes widen as Antony's body drops at his feet, his uniform burned and his skin blue from rigor mortis. Edward moves again, and I stand still, waiting as he grabs a bucket of kerosene and walks back, preparing to dump it on the corpse. Let him do it, I say, pointing at the fool who questioned my authority. Edward glances up at me before nodding and passing the bucket off. The young man stares down for long moments, taking in the singed and nearly unrecognizable insignia on Antony's chest, his face growing angrier by the second. And then he tips the bucket, allowing the liquid to pour onto the body, splashing off the ground and puddling around his feet. Hoots and hollers from the rebels accompany his actions. My eyes meet Edward's, and unspoken words pass between us. This man will not live to see another sunset. But for now, I'll allow him this moment. It's good for morale. Pulling a matchbox from my cloak's pocket, I strike a flame against the side. Brute force can win a war, I start, heat dancing against my fingertips. But our strength is in patience, in planning. That is what topples empires. Together we rule, divided we fall. Antony's body explodes into flames when I drop the match, the smell of burning flesh potent as it curls in the air as smoke.
Down with Michael Farsa, someone yells. Death to the king, others chime in.
We move soon, friends, I smile. Stay prepared.
Chapter 15, Sarah B. I've been here for a week, but this is the first time I've ventured outside of the castle walls into the actual town of Saxham. A clock tower sits in the centre of the square, and businesses line both sides of the cobblestone streets, brand new shiny lampposts accenting the sidewalks. I've never seen a streetlight in person before, and my insides churn as I realise just how prosperous the main area of Saxham is, while silver struggles without. Michael and I have been sitting inside the Chocolate Gorge, a patisserie that's known for making the best sweets in the region. Timothy, Xander, and my ladies perch at a table across the room from us, and a few royal guards line the entrance. But other than that, there's no one here. Is it always this empty? I ask, pushing my dessert plate away. Michael smirks, his slicked back brown hair gleaming under the lights.
Couldn't have the commoners interrupting when I'm trying to woo you.
My chest pinches as I peer out the front windows, where half a dozen people line up around barricades, trying to glance inside to see their king. Do you come here often? He shrugs.
Not since I was a child. My father used to bring Tristan and me here once in a blue moon.
My blood heats when he mentions his brother, but I ignore it. I will not let him affect me when he's not even around. Still, I can't help imagining Tristan and Michael as children, eating all the chocolates and candies with their father looking on. Everything I've heard of King Michael II's legacy is in all the ways he failed his country. It's difficult for me to picture him as a man who cared for his family, and curiosity brims inside of me, wanting to learn more. That's very sweet, I say. Michael scoffs, his eyes moving past mine before coming back. He smiles, but I see the flash of pain that haunts his features.
Sarah Beatro, you are a bleeding heart, aren't you?
I sit up straighter. Isn't that something you should want in your queen? He tilts his head.
And you're so sure you'll be my queen?
Blowing out a breath, I stare down at my lap before peeking at him from beneath my lashes. I'm sure that I was bred specifically for you, Your Majesty. I think you'd be doing yourself a great disservice to not keep me at your side.
He hums, his fingers coming up to rub at his jaw.
Bred for me?
I nod, reaching out to grasp my cup of tea and taking a sip before placing it back on the table.
My uncle turned many suitors down, hoping one day I would belong to you.
It's a gamble, telling him this, and it's a gross exaggeration. But I'm banking on the fact Michael loves having his ego stroked and is possessive over his toys. I was told this long before coming here, and it's noticeable in the way he preens whenever he's paid a compliment and sulks when something isn't going his way. Hopefully, learning I was meant for him all along will entice him to snatch me up and collect me like a treasure. He leans across the table, his brows rising.
And what of you, Sarah? I'll be honest, I'm not very interested in what your uncle wants.
My eyes lock on his, the weight of responsibility dropping into my gut and pushing the words from my mouth.
After meeting you? I want nothing more.
A slow smile creeps along his face, and he settles back into his chair, a satisfied look coasting across his features.
Sire, Xander interrupts, coming to stand next to the table. There's a journalist set up outside, ready to take your photos, and then we need to head back to the castle for a meeting with the Privy Council.
Michael nods, glancing out the front windows. His face pinches, nose scrunching up in obvious disgust.
So many people outside.
They're behind the barricade, sire. They won't get near you, Xander reassures.
Michael stands, placing a top hat on his head and holding out an arm to me.
Showtime, Sarah Beatro. You want this? Make it look good.
I grin back at him, although it feels as though an elephant is sitting on my chest. My fingers wrap around his elbow as I rise, stomach tightening in anticipation. Timothy goes first, holding open the door for us, and we make our way outside, the guards moving to flank our sides. Murmurs race through the people on the sidewalk, and there's a man in a tweed suit ahead, a large tripod with a camera sitting on top placed next to him. He bows when we approach.
Your Majesty, milady.
Michael stares down his nose at the man, his jaw ticking. I glance between the two of them, irritation grating my nerves, annoyed he isn't even acknowledging him.
Are you the reporter? I ask.
He looks at me, a small grin gracing his lips.
I am, ma'am. Very well,
Michael cuts in. He turns to me, winking, as if he's about to pull a prank, before he reaches in his pocket and takes my hand in his.
Lady Beatro, it would be my greatest honour if you would accept my hand in marriage.
I stare up at him, my neck craning to meet his eyes from under the brim of my hat. He clears his throat, his eyes hardening more with every passing second. His grip on my hand tightens. I jolt out of my daze, realizing this was his grand proposal. No bended knee, no heartfelt speech. Just a few rushed words and expectation. I'm not sure why I was standing here like a fool, waiting for anything else. I'm surprised he did it in public at all. I had waited the first couple days to see if he would extend a formal proposal, and when it never happened, I figured it was just assumed. Adopting a surprised expression, I lift my free hand to my chest.
It's beautiful, I say,
staring at the massive diamond cushioned by a pearl on each side.
It would be my greatest honour to be your wife.
He takes the ring from its ornate box and slips it on my finger.
This was my mother's. I hope you appreciate the sentiment.
I keep the smile pasted on my face as he pulls me into his side, even though the thought of wearing anything that belonged to the Dowager Queen makes bile rise to the back of my throat. Michael turns us, adopting a beaming grin for the camera. Cheers go up from the people behind the barricades, words of congratulations soaring through the air. But it's all muddled behind the sudden whooshing in my ears as my eyes lock on a tall, cloaked figure across the street, leaning against one of those shiny black lamp posts. My heart skips. I can't see his face, but somehow I just know it's him. Tristan. Michael turns us to wave at the people behind the barricades before leading us toward the automobile. I follow, the smile plastered on my face like papier-mâché, my heart pounding in my chest, although I'm not sure why it's racing. The guards crowd around us as we head toward the automobile, hiding everything from view, and it isn't until I'm in the back seat that I'm able to search again. But he's already gone. I've attended Sunday service my entire life. When I was young, the pews were always full, but as time wore on and resources dwindled, attendance grew sparse. Turns out, people lose their faith when faced with never-ending adversity. The church itself was plain, small wooden benches and beige walls that had browned due to lack of funds and lack of willpower. That's what happens when your source of livelihood is ripped out from the roots. When the men who are put in positions of power decide to withhold funds and forget that you're part of what makes them whole. And as I sit in the beautiful cathedral attached to the Saxham Castle, I can't help but feel bitter for all the ways the people here have everything, while all of mine have gone without. We're the same country, yet we're worlds apart. The cathedral itself is beautiful. Dark woods and grey stone archways carved with intricate designs, laced in gold detail. Soaring ceilings are covered with colourful art, the type I'm sure took decades to complete. And the only light other than the flame of candles is from the muted sun bleeding through stained glass windows, splashing on the beige and brownstone tile in kaleidoscopes of colour. The service has ended, and while everyone else has disappeared, including my betrothed, I'm still here, having told them I wanted some time to pray. Truthfully, I'm waiting on Xander. I fidget in my spot, the wood bench numbing my legs. When I glance around and ensure no one else is here, I stand, moving to the walkway between the pews. My pale pink dress kisses the floor. My hands, covered in matching gloves, run down my sleeves first and then the front of my skirt, smoothing away the wrinkles. My steps clack on the tile, echoing off the walls as I make my way toward the altar. The crucifix is front and center, and something pulls in my chest as I stare at the sculpture. A hollow type of sadness, spinning webs through my heart. I've never questioned my duty to my family or the justice that we seek. It's all I've ever known, even before my father's death, all they have conditioned me to want. But for the first time, I'm empathetic toward the plight of Jesus, although I'd never dare to speak it out loud. How unfair that he had to sacrifice himself in order to cleanse our sins. Finally, I tear my eyes away and move toward the shadows, realizing there's a large oil painting hanging on display near the darkened hallway at the front of the room. The portrait is of a king. Black hair peeks from beneath his bejeweled crown, piercing jade-green eyes that come to life through the picture, fierce and harsh. A shiver skates down my spine. That's my father. My breath whooshes out of me, stomach jumping to my throat as I spin around, coming face to face with Tristan. My hand flies to my chest. You scared me! The corner of his lips tilt as he steps up next to me, his hands in his pockets as he glances at the portrait. I side-eye him, wondering what his relationship was with his father. Michael piqued my curiosity, and while I don't expect Tristan to open up, I can't help the question from flowing off my tongue. Do you miss him? Something dark coasts over his face, his jaw tensing. Yes. My mouth pops open, turning my head to study him. I miss my father too. It's all I can think of to say. I'm happy he's dead and I hope he rots in hell. Seems like it wouldn't be an appropriate response. He stares up at the painting, and so I follow suit, taking in the angles of King Michael II's face and how similar they are to Tristan's. He looks like you, I note, glancing at him again from the corner of my eye. His brow rises.
You mean unbearably attractive?
I smile, terrifyingly so. He nods, twisting toward me.
And are you one who runs from your fears, Sarah Beatro, or do you face them?
My heart kicks against my ribs and my mouth goes dry. I don't believe in running.
No, you might change your mind living here.
My stomach drops, the good feeling disappearing. Is that a threat?
A warning, he replies.
I saw you yesterday, I blurt, in the town square. You were hiding your face like quite the little creeper. Is that because you didn't want to be seen? He steps closer, until his frame towers over mine, strands of his dishevelled black hair falling over his brow.
So many questions, for someone who gives nothing in return.
My legs freeze in place, like I've stepped into wet cement and let it dry around my feet. What do you want to know?
Everything.
That could take a long time.
You're about to marry into the family. We have nothing but time. Unless Michael tires of you before the wedding and chooses one of his other whores instead.
He cocks his head, his eyes calculating as they blaze over my skin.
Or maybe you have a secret agenda.
Irritation rushes through my chest, expanding like a heat wave. I am not a whore. My fists clench at my sides. And just because you have no propensity for morals doesn't mean it extends to others. He reaches up and cups my chin, his thumb brushing over my lips.
Such a smart mouth. Pity my brother won't know how to tame it.
Fire blazes through my veins so fast my stomach cramps. I don't need to be tamed.
No,
he smirks. I stand on my own.
Yet you'll come here every Sunday, pledging your life to a man in the sky.
I crane my neck to maintain eye contact as he presses against me, his breath hot as it coasts across my mouth, making tension twist down my spine.
If you want a god to worship, ma petite menteuse, no need to look so far.
Scoffing.